step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Thank you. Legacy of 1804. I am your host, Alice Backer. Today's date is December 22nd, 2017. And tonight we explore the news of Haiti and its diaspora in another Legacy of 1804 news and blog review. Are you as excited as we are? Anyway. My co-host tonight is Hugues Girard, who should already be on the line. Hugues, are you here with us?
I am, Alice. Good evening, listeners of Legacy of 1804. Once again, it's a great pleasure to be back with you.
All right. So, Hugues, we haven't done one of these in a few weeks, so I'm assuming lots has transpired. And why don't we start out with what the highlights are going to be of our discussion tonight?
Quite a bit. In the highlights, we see the death, the murder of Catholic priest Père Joseph Simoli at his place of residence. Yesterday or the day before, he was gunned down by people on a motorcycle. There was a spot between the police chief, the national police chief, and President Jovenel at the National Palace. Reaction to the judiciary system, Haiti's judiciary system, to statements made in France by Jovenel during his recent trip there. And the funeral of popular singer Manu Chalmai are some of the highlights that we should discuss tonight. Should I go on? Alice?
Yes. So why don't we start with Manu Chalmai?
Manu Chalmai passed away in Miami about a week ago. He had, as we know, Manu Chalmai bursted onto the scene as a folk singer, as what we call an engaged singer, somebody who's involved. With the grassroots movement, and he was not your typical troubadour with a guitar singing under the windows of girls. Quite the opposite. Amano Chalmai went to the heart of the matter in the late 70s and talked about how people felt and what they were living outside of the circles of the Duvaliers and those doing well at the time. So he sang about the plight of the people, those who couldn't eat or didn't have a chance of wasted youth, wasted potential. And his rise would coincide with the advent of the Lavalas movement. So he was identified with the people, with the masses. He was, of course, so he ran afoul of the first the Duvalier regime. Apparently Manu was politically involved from a very young age, having been arrested and tortured by the regime of François Duvalier when he was 15 years old. And then he went up against the son of Jean-Claude Duvalier. And after being elected mayor of Port-au-Prince, something that he regretted himself, he went back to singing and basically was associated with Lavalas. And when the military coup of 1991 took place, Manu had to flee, had to go into exile. He was hunted down. He was, at some point, he was holed up in the Argentinian embassy, and the only way he got out was from intervention from Jonathan Demme, of all people, who mounted an international network of support to force the military regime at the time to give him safe passage out of Haiti and into exile in Miami and Montreal, and something that he would sing about later We suspect that this is the base of one of his more popular songs, "Le Mal du Pays," aching for one's homeland, among popular songs. So he was in Miami, pretty much in obscurity for a while. He had a regular gig at the Tap Tap restaurant in South Beach. He traveled a lot. He gave concerts, but he fell out of style as people age, you know, new artists emerge on the scene. But he continued to write, and he put out some pretty good album. And one of his more successful output has been a video documentary that, and he was the subject. It was his biography and his ascent as an artist. That was the subject of the video biography called A Conviction. Something I highly recommend. It's on YouTube. People can look at it and get a better idea of who Manuel was. He was very charismatic, tall, a handsome face. He was very funny. I personally knew Manuel growing up in Carrefour. He was a few years older than I, but I have relatives who played with him. So it was very interesting to watch him become the person that he became over the years. He passed away a victim of cancer, apparently, lungs, cancers of the lung, brain, and prostate. And so there was a mass organized for him at Notre Dame d'Haïti Catholic Church in Miami Beach, well attended, but people looked at that event as a little strange, knowing that Mano was an avowed anti-Catholic. He said so himself in the video that if there's one institution that he really doesn't like, it's the Catholic Church. He professed to be an atheist politically. He saw himself as a Marxist, and he would eventually, change sides, depends on the mood of the moment. And that too created a big controversy regarding his legacy. And so we suspect that had something to do with the decision. Once he got to Haiti, the body was taken back to Haiti to for national funeral, to have a Haitian voodoo priest officiate at his funeral, something that took place this afternoon at the Kiosk Oxygency at the Chanmas Plaza. People noticed the absence of the so-called masses of people, the kind who used to come, en masse to his concerts. Wherever he went, he could put great numbers of people together on very short notice. Ironically, today at his funeral, these people were not to be seen. Instead, we saw a whole long list of government officials at his funeral, and that raised many eyebrows, particularly because apparently he had remained friends with fellow artists like Sweet Nikki, who was also at the funeral.
That's very interesting. That is so interesting. Let me just say what the Miami Herald reports, and you can continue. The Miami Herald says that former Haitian President Michel Martelly, who had been pushing to bring Charlemagne back to Haiti before his death and was instrumental in getting the government to pay for the funeral, said he deserves the state ceremony. Based on the dimensions of Manu and how huge he is, why not consider something national? Martelly told the Miami Herald in a telephone interview from Port-au-Prince. He deserves it. Martelly, also a singer who goes by the stage persona Sweet Nikki, said prior to Charlemagne's death, plans had been in the works to fly him back to Haiti, but he was too weak and could not travel. We had to wait until he recovered, which never happened, Martelly said. Now, this is another way in which Haitian politics has a way of playing tricks on us, right? These two should
absolutely
technically not be that close. How do you explain this? How do you explain that the people who attended his concerts while he was alive were not at his funeral? And then how do you explain this Martelly? I guess they were both singers, but in some ways, Haitian partisanship kind of has a way of showing us surprises. How do you explain this Martelly outpouring for him towards his death?
Prior to getting involved in
the technically two radically opposed sides of the Haitian political spectrum. Again, technically, because these things are very strange.
Very technically, because in reality, Mano and Miki go way back in Carrefour together. They both grew up in Carrefour. That's right. So they knew each other. But they came from opposite ends of the social spectrum. Even though on stage, or I suspect back then, you know, they would jam together. I would be hard pressed to call Miki Mano's friend, honestly, because the Mano I knew, you know, he was a batonel, he was a rara kind of guy, he was just a guitar and by the beach, whereas Miki worked really hard to be accepted by the hotel crowd of Pétionville. So even though Miki came from Carrefour, he was not known as a Carrefour guy. That I can attest to, as a Carrefour guy. So that's one aspect. There are some people who, some critics who speculated that Mano's passing has basically been hijacked by the current government, precisely to keep his funeral from turning into a demonstration. Some speculate that maybe he had money issues. But then the response to this is that Mano was so well connected, so many people knew him, that money would not have been an issue with him in terms of taking care of him or his last days or his funeral or any of those issues. He didn't have a money issue because he had very, very loyal, very supportive friends, very well-placed people as friends and associates. So the most we can say is that his funeral was hijacked, especially after he got closer to the government. If you remember correctly, at some point during Miki's presidency, he needed to set up some kind of committee to review some law that he had enacted, and he called upon credible people like Mano Chalmai and Kopé Filo from Radio Haïti Fame. These were respected people, respected media personalities with credibility that were supposed to reflect on what Miki was trying to do at the time. And that shocked people back then, that somebody like Mano Chalmai would say okay to overtures from Miki. So in many minds, that's pretty much, that event set the stage for what we witnessed today, for the government hijacking the funeral, for Miki showing up, and for the masses being kept away or staying away voluntarily. So it's one of those many inexplicable, seemingly inexplicable events. But if you look in the background, you can see how this happened. Yes.
Now, the Miami Herald went on about Martelly. This is not the only thing they said. They said, people tend to recognize people when they die, Martelly said. A fan of Chalmai since he was a teenager, Martelly, 56, who often sang about the country's misery before his successful 2010 presidential bid, said he often drew inspiration from Chalmai's songs and guitar-based Toubadou melodies. You don't hear his type of song.
We know that.
You don't hear his
type
of song.
I'm sorry, I couldn't let that one slide by.
I know. Mano was unique in the way he spoke about problems in Haiti, the reality in Haiti. He talked about real stories of life, stories that could touch you and make you, whether man or woman, cry, Martelly said. He marked our time, our culture, the former president added. He opened a lot of young people's minds to Haiti's problems and on how to dream, how to think. He was really a talent. So, yeah, so that's Martelly waxing poetic, again, unlikely bedfellows, on Mano Chalmai's death, even though they appear to come from opposite ends of the political spectrum. Now, this happens a lot in Haiti because at the end of the day, you find that sometimes kinship trumps politics in Haiti. This is
correct.
This wouldn't be the first time that we've seen this. Okay, and then in, you know, if you say that they both came from Carrefour, that wouldn't be ridiculously surprising. Okay.
But on the other hand, I'm sorry. Let me jump in there. As someone from Carrefour, let me explain that being from Carrefour did not make them bedfellows. Mickey's father was an executive from, I believe, a Texaco oil company. He was a local executive, okay? Whereas living in a very comfortable house, drawing a very comfortable salary in a nice part of Carrefour in Torlun. Whereas Mano and I lived practically in shacks in Port-Plage. Here's a class difference again. So just because you're from Carrefour, not everybody from Carrefour were created equal. You know, Mickey came from a two-parent family. Mano came from a single mother, and he spoke about it himself. He didn't know his father. Mickey went to several comfortable schools. Mano felt very extremely lucky to have spent time at the Frère du Bicentenaire, et cetera. So there's more to the story, as you say. But I guess I object to the word kinship. I find it very hard to see any real kinship between Martelli and Mano. But then again, they were both artists, so they probably ran in somewhat similar circles. But that's about the most I can say in terms of kinship between Mano and Martelli. That's my piece. I'm good.
All right. Legacy of 1804, we are reviewing the recent Haiti news. Why don't we move on to the much maligned visit of Jovenel Moïse to France. If you can give us a background for the visit. We saw that, obviously on social media, we saw a lot of people take offense to some aspects of the visit, including, just visuals of his body language while standing next to French officials, which people felt was not very presidential, or, you know, other details. But what can you tell us about that visit to France?
The visit to France take place on the occasion of former French colonies affected from climate change. Because, as you know, Trump had decided not to sign on legislation for the climate change. So with France and Macron, new French President Macron has pretty much taken the lead on science to curb or slow down climate change. So to that end, he was organizing a big powwow, and Jovenel thought it was a good time for him to to show up internationally, because Haiti is definitely one of the countries affected by climate change. And so he jetted off to France with a crowd, with a delegation of some 30 to 40 people to begin with. Let's not forget that when a Haitian president travels, in addition to his expenses, he gets a $20,000 per diem every day. And this is something that inherited from Mickey's days, who had changed it from 5,000 on the Préval to 20,000. And everyone else in the,
Which is more than a bit ridiculous. Yeah.
Considering a country like Haiti, but it gets worse from there. Every one of these 30 to 40 people traveling with the president get some kind of stipend. And under Mickey's time, the lowest was $2,500 per day, in addition to, you know, airplane ticket, transportation between places, hotel, three meals plus snacks a day, and taxis, you know, waiting, etc. So this was a massive outlay of money to go to France. Many speculate that a lot of what little money that France ended up promising in the fight of climate change in Haiti, something like totaling $80 million, many people speculate that this money was already spent on the trip itself. When you think of all the details of all the expenses involved with moving such a big crowd on the state's dime. So when he had Jovenel had problems getting to France itself, because he transited via England, and apparently the people in charge of the protocol, the people in charge of putting the trip together, didn't make sure that the president had the visa that he needed to enter England, even though he was in transit. So at first, the speculation was that this happened to be fogged and cloud over London, so his plane couldn't take off for Paris. At first, that was the explanation, that somehow his plane to Paris causing him to meet a scheduled event with the local Haitian diaspora in Paris was eventually canceled because of plane issues. Then it became the news was confirmed that there was no plane issue, but in fact the president didn't have a visa to enter British soil. So he was stuck at Heathrow in London for a while people made phone calls, and eventually he was cleared to move on to Paris, where he eventually met with Macron, and those pictures that you're referring to, one where he's sitting very uncomfortably on the cushion, on the sofa. He's sitting on the cushion. Another where he seems to be bowing his head, talking to Macron, and also looking very uncomfortable in his winter coat, etc. Little gossipy details that people came up with. Personally, I can forgive the whole issue with the coat, especially his wife's coat, knowing that these people are from the, they don't live in cold climates. They're not in temperate zones. They are tropical people. So a faux pas with a coat is okay. But the body language made many Haitians very quizzy. It gets worse from there. Finally, Jovenel did meet with the Haitian community in Paris and made many controversial statements. Among them is that he was forced to nominate 50 corrupt judges into the Haitian judiciary system. People thought this was quite scandalous, considering that he was in France to, among other things, because he also took a small delegation of Haitian businessmen, about 12 of some of the most prominent Haitian businessmen with him, to look for business partnership in France. People felt that the statement about being forced to name 50 corrupt judges into the system, judiciary system, was counterproductive. That's probably not a good way to encourage people to come invest in your country. If you're telling them there's a good chance that if they get into problems with the local system, they will have to contend with corrupt judges. So this provoked quite a reaction. By the time he landed back in Port-au-Prince, people were already up in arms waiting for him. But it gets worse. not only did he tell the Haitian community in Paris that he was forced, he didn't say by whom, but he was compelled, he was forced to name 50 corrupt judges into the judiciary system. But he also said, they asked him the question, they asked him questions about the report on Petro-Caribe money. The Petro-Caribe report, as you know, the investigation that was led by the Haitian Senate, this report is supposed to be signed and sent to the judiciary by the parliament after signature from Jovenel. But Jovenel stated to the people in Paris that he's doing all that's possible and he has all the right people in the right places to make sure that the report doesn't go anywhere, because as far as he's concerned, that report is just, it's not, scientific, it's not impartial, it's just a basis for quote unquote political persecution of the people named in the report, the people who have been indexed as possibly corrupt, of having mismanaged public funds, of having appropriated public funds, of not having defended the interests of the state in awarding contracts, and so on and so forth. So Jovenel told the crowd that he has the right people in place to make sure that this report goes nowhere. And that includes his own indictment. Let's not forget, this is this gentleman was indicted on money laundering charges before he even swore in. He was even sworn in as president of the country. So by the time he got back, the judiciary system was up in arms. We can talk about that in a minute in the context of other issues taking place in Haiti.
Indeed. So what else do we have aside from the Mano Chalmain death and Jovenel Moïse's visit to France?
Yeah, and then we went to France. We also have, there was a meeting that was supposed to take place at the National Palace. Jovenel had initiated this dialogue with the different figures in the country as he tries to put together Haiti's permanent electoral council as opposed to the a provisional ones that Haiti has had for the last 30 years. So he's meeting with different sectors that should lead to a new permanent electoral council. And also he's meeting with different members of society, different institutions, as his government considers amending the constitution. They want to amend the constitution. And so one of the people that was supposed to meet with him at the National Palace was the chief of the national police, Mr. Gédéon. And when the chief of the national police, as you know, Jovenel and the chief of police have had some, they don't get along, because Jovenel accused the chief of police of being instrumental in getting Guy Philippe arrested and shipped out of the country by the DEA. Because of Jovenel has his own issues with the law, because he has a case on file ongoing through Haiti's court system, he's not too friendly with the national police chief. So when the national police chief showed up to this meeting, I believe yesterday, he was told that he couldn't park his car in the parking lot of the National Palace, that he had to park his car on the street and then walk in on foot. And he was told this by a parking lot attendant. Needless to say, the police chief got in his car and drove home. He didn't attend the meeting.
Very interesting. Very interesting. What do we have, by the way? Go ahead.
Now, I was going to say, and that's a notable event, because just today, the U.S. Embassy, sometime around 2 in the afternoon, put out on Twitter notice to Americans in Haiti to avoid the Delma 95 area, because there were exchanges of gunfire between the national police and quote-unquote unknown criminals. So, in other words, there's Haiti is back in tension. There's a lot of tension in the streets of Port-au-Prince. This ties to other events, but let's deal with your questions first.
No. Let's move on to the other events.
Well, the other event is the shooting death of Catholic priest Père Joseph Simoli, which took place at his house. At first, the national police reported that this was a robbery, that he was followed home by people on motorcycles because he had been coming from a bank. But later reports pointed out that no, he wasn't coming from a bank. He was leaving his house. These people were in ambush, apparently waiting for him. Père Joseph Simoli is associated with the liberation theology movement. So it's a familiar event of Catholic priests associated with that movement being gunned down in Haiti, Catholic priests such as T. Jean-Pierre Louis, such as Jean-Marie Vincent, and many others like them throughout Latin America. Catholic priests associated with the theology, the liberation theology movement, tend to be targets of right-wing governments such as we have in Haiti currently. Especially in light of the fact that just very recently, on December 8th, Father Simon Lee had spoken against, had spoken very loudly during a march organized against corruption in Haiti. Corruption, as you know, have made the news recently. Even people who were in the past associated, who were very supportive with the government of Martelly and its stepchild, if you will, government of Jovenel Moïse, are up in arms about corruption in the system, because another day goes by where you don't have a whole list of new people being pointed out as corrupt, especially in light of the Petrocaribe report that came out very recently, where a whole list of former prime ministers and ministers and director generals of government departments have all been accused of being corrupt in one way or the other. So there was a big march on December 8th organized by, again, people who were very supportive of the government. And that march coincided with the Catholic celebration of Notre Dame d'Immaculée Conception. And the Catholics came out in drove, and Father Simon Lee spoke very strongly against corruption in the country. So the speculation right now is that what looked like a robbery may very well have been a political murder, again, in the vein of those of Jean-Pierre Louis and Jean-Marie Vincent, and murders by bikers, motorbikers, something that was very en vogue, by the way, in Zaire under Mobutu Sese Seko, where the perceived enemies of the regime would be gunned down on the street by bikers. We want to point out that the news spat of people being gunned down, especially politically active people being gunned down on the streets of Port-au-Prince, coincided with a distribution of motorcycles that Martelly had organized in the neighborhood of Fort National. And among the people who were present at this distribution of giving away basically motorbikes in as Christmas gifts, sometime in late December of 2011, was the French ambassador Didier Lebret, who was also present. So we're seeing a familiar pattern here. A pattern of perceived enemies of the government in place being gunned down on the street by motorbikers.
All right, Legacy of 1804. We're talking to our co-host Hugues Giral from Florida, and I'm of course Alice Backer in Brooklyn. And if you need to weigh in on our discussion tonight, you can do so at 714-242-6119. 714-242-6119. You want to call in or press 1 as soon as possible because we're not going to be on the air for much, much longer. Again, 714-242-6119. Now, of course, people are gearing up for their three-day weekend. I know I certainly am. I'm not trying to stay on the air ad infinitum tonight. But what else what else is there of note that happened in the last 3 weeks in our Haitian Haitian diaspora sphere, Hugues?
I think Mano has dominated the news mostly. TPS seems to want to come back on the surface because there was some change, but people are still in limbo. They're not sure what's going to happen. Little Haiti
and
seems to
what
be
is
back
that in- change? What is that change? As
well,
the
there was
Trump
there
giving
was
18
this,
months.
That's pretty much it. Trump extending, giving people another 18 months to get their affairs together.
And I mean, that was way over a month ago. So it's not so much in limbo. People basically just have to, you know, it's an invitation by the administration for people to wrap up and, you know, for TPS to wrap up. There was, I did have a guest on the show three or four weeks ago from the from BAGI, the Black Alliance for Just Immigration, to discuss the forum that they were going to have that Monday, and of course to discuss the issue. You know, so basically what's happening is all sorts of organizations that provide services to immigrants and undocumented immigrants are just trying to make sure that TPS holders know the rights that they do have while they're here for these 18 months. And essentially what's going to happen is the TPS holders are going to join the ranks of the undocumented who were here long before TPS was ever an issue. So what's going to happen is the vast majority of these TPS holders are just going to join the ranks of the undocumented. And so all of the TPS advocates now have to, you know, turn to solutions for all the undocumented, not just the TPS holders, which is what we were discussing from the very beginning here at Legacy of 1804, and as well as some of our friends on Haitian radio.
That and aren't people still trying to convince Trump that Haiti is in no position to welcome 60,000 of its citizens living abroad, in light of what? On one hand, the Trump administration is saying everything's fine, everything's better, they should go home. On the other, the embassy itself is issuing notices to its citizens that there seems to be another reemergence of street violence in Port-au-Prince, and that Haiti, if travel to Haiti is not absolutely necessary, it is to be avoided. Sounds like a familiar refrain, doesn't it? Alice?
Yeah, I wish him good luck on that one. The reality is that, you know, in all practicality, the vast majority of the 60,000 will not be returning to Haiti. I doubt that the administration is going to put resources in returning them to Haiti. They're just going to join the ranks of the undocumented in the United States.
Okay.
I'm just trying to be realistic. I mean, let's see. I kind of doubt that they're going to have much luck. I think it is the right thing for these TPS activists to just switch to becoming activists for all the undocumented, personally. So I think we may have done the rounds, unless you can think of something else, Hugues.
No, that's pretty much it, except this thing in Haiti about changing constitution. There seems to be they're pushing really hard for it. A member of the lower, yes, Gary Boudou, who's a member of the lower chamber of the Haiti's parliament, gathered some 7 or 8 former prime ministers at a hotel in Pétionville, where they are all pointing out all that's wrong with the Haitian constitution as to why they weren't able to do a better job. All these people are failures, but now they're putting together reasons why we should change the constitution, and they are the one apparently who know best how Haiti can move forward. Mind you, this constitution, which was voted by the people back in 1987, will now be amended by a parliament. whose members are questionable at best. Many of them, we want to remind the listening public, are certified criminals. Many of them, some of them were literally yanked out of the jailhouse into parliament. They were literally in the jailhouse in the morning and sitting in parliament in the afternoon. It was scandalous and outrageous. And these are the people who are about to change the Constitution without asking the people who they are supposed to represent what they think about any of this. So this is something that is being pushed very hard by both the legislature and the executive branch. So stay tuned. This is something we should keep an eye out for. We'll hear a lot more about it. So these seven former prime ministers got together to complain about the restrictions of the Constitution and the fact that they were not able to get clearances mm-hmm. for their management, for the administration of public funds, so that many of them with more political ambitions find themselves stuck today because, whoever's in charge of granting them those clearances so they can move on with their political life feel that there are many unanswered questions as to the records of these seven prime ministers. That was the last thing I thought I should point out. This is the next.
Yeah, and thank you so much for that, Hugues. Great roundup as usual. But now that we've discussed the Constitution, we can't not discuss the status of the reinstitution of the Army. Is that still a hot topic?
Yes and no. But as far as people can tell, the reinstitution of the of the Army is a done deal, except it has no funding that we know of. It doesn't have a doctrine. There's just a lot of work to do. So until a further notice, a lot of people are referring to the so-called Army. They're referring to it as Jovenel's militia, because that's pretty much what it is. You have 500 people who are recruited, trained, and put in uniform. And frankly, certainly no one in the Hmong population can say for certain that these are actual Haitians, because no one knows who they are, who they were. At least no one outside of the circle of PHTK, whose mission was to bring back the army. No one outside of the circle of the ruling party right now knows who are these people that they're calling the army. The gentleman, the former officer of the disbanded army, for example, that who's now been made the general of this new army, for example, he was one of the people convicted in absentia at the last trial for atrocities committed by the army, atrocities which would eventually lead to the dismissal, to the demise of the whole institution. So that there's a lot of work that remains to be done there. So we have to stay tuned on that one as well.
All right, Legacy of 1804. Thank you, Hugues, for joining us tonight for this news and blog review. And I certainly wish you, Hugues, and everybody listening, happy holidays and Merry Christmas as we're heading into that three-day weekend. And Lord only knows I need it, and I'm getting ready to unwind during it and enjoy the break from work. We are going to be here. We're going to do everything we can to be here next Friday. But I am also going to be on a plane on Saturday. So I still have to figure out the logistics of all this. But we're certainly going to do our best to speak before the new year. And so again, thank you, Hugues, for joining us. Thank you, listeners. And let's stay in touch on social media to find out what happens next week. Legacy of 1804, signing out.
Happy holidays.
All right. Thank you.
the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.